Hurricane Irma left a huge human and built environment toll in its devastating wake. And it also roared through the fragile Everglades, the vast subtropical wetland known as the River of Grass that covers the southern 20% of Florida. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and part of it is a national park, but the Everglades ecosystem is now about half of its original area since people started draining it for development and agriculture in the 1800s. And intense hurricanes have also had an impact. We turn now to Fernando Miralles Villam, a hydrologist at the University of Maryland. Professor, welcome to Living on Earth.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
First, just briefly describe what kind of ecosystem the Everglades is and some of the species that thrive there.
Right. So the Everglades is a wetland. It's essentially a land that naturally wants to be wet. It's a very rich ecosystem with anything that goes from the Florida panther all the way down to snail kites and small fish and the seaside sable sparrow. So it's a very rich ecosystem, both from the fauna and the flora point of view.
So people like to call the Everglades the River of Grass. Why is it a river of grass?
It's a river of grass because in its natural state, water flows as a very shallow sheet, very slow moving through the vegetation, which naturally was primarily grass until you reach the coastal areas and when the vegetation there starts to change. So if you actually look at the Everglades from above, from an airplane or from further out, what you see is a very expanse matrix of grass, you know, with some little bits of trees here and there. And these are the natural parts of the Everglades that still exist. If you look at the history of the Everglades and particularly how it relates to development in South Florida, the Everglades were drained systematically in order to develop the land. Places like, you know, Miami and inland and south of Miami and also north of Miami, so Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach. These were areas that actually were developed through draining the Everglades.
Now, so given that the Everglades goes between fresh and salt water at that threshold, what kind of impact could that storm surge that was brought by Hurricane Irma had on the Everglades?
If you think about the storm surge, it's almost like nature trying to restore in a very accelerated way the natural processes in the Everglades. Fresh water flows from Lake Okeechobee south and gets discharged as a very slow-moving sheet to the coasts. That was balanced by the coastal environment, which is the boundary with the sea, sort of created this interface between fresh water and salt water. What has happened is that with all this development, we have created a number of pulses, much larger than natural, of fresh water into the coast. And this has affected the marine ecosystem. So what these storm surges are doing is that they're sort of bringing all of a sudden large amounts of salt water back and sort of trying to recreate that interface that we have lost. Now, doing it in such a sudden way through one of these extreme storms, Irma and others that have happened in the past, it's, of course, not the ideal way to restore natural ecosystem. But that's sort of nature sort of coming back at you in a way.
What do we know at this point about approximately how much storm surge in the Everglades was experienced as Hurricane Irma passed through?
We're seeing numbers from as low as 3 feet and as high as more than 10 in different pieces. It's not trivial at all.
Fernando, Irma also brought a lot of rain. To what extent do downpours affect that fresh to salt water balance in the Everglades? And how much could the wetlands actually benefit from all that rain as well as the storm surge?
So the other part of storms like Irma is, of course, is the fresh water that's poured on top of the wetlands. So imagine what's happening at the same time. You have lots of fresh water falling on the wetlands and trying to get out to the coast because of the topography and because of these channels that are there. And then the stormwater surge bringing in seawater in. So you have these two sort of like a collision of waters. You have a fresh water trying to get out, salt water in. The dynamics of that interface and where it is between the fresh water and salt water has likely changed pre and post Irma. for places that gain fresh water, you know, the freshwater species will tend to thrive. And, you know, there are a few species like that, vegetation-wise, that thrive. And the grasses are one example. So grasses like to be inundated. Trees, on the other hand, don't like to be flooded. Then, on the other hand, if you look at the saltwater piece, species that like saltwater, like mangroves, like some species of fish, will thrive. So you could see, and we've seen this before, sort of a redistribution of vegetation across the Everglades.
Of course, Florida is known for its alligators. And at the very southern edge of the Everglades, where it starts to get pretty salty, there are crocodiles. With an increased salinity, how much more risk is there from crocodiles moving upstream, as it were?
I mean, the risk is there. We haven't done that analysis yet. You know, we haven't started collecting that data yet. We'll know a lot more over the next few weeks to months.
And I ask about crocodiles because, as you know, alligators are, well, they're relatively laid back in comparison to even the American crocodile, which, you know, seems to start its day thinking, I need to get a meal or several before it's over.
Yes.
Fernando, how have human activities that disrupt the natural hydrologic cycle in the Everglades weakened the Everglades' resilience in the face of a changing climate?
Right. So the story is, you know, is fairly straightforward. If you look at a map of South Florida, or even if you actually look at from an airplane when you fly into Miami or Fort Lauderdale, what you see is these canals that run from the urban locations to the coast. And what we actually have built is a very sophisticated network of canals that was designed to get water out of the system as quickly as we needed to, in order to not flood, in order to be able to build, make land available for development, etc. When we built those canals, we're essentially short-circuiting the slow-moving natural flow of water that occurred before. We have accelerated the drainage, and we have reduced the ability of the system to hold the water and to be that buffer. And I think the new vision and the vision that we have missed in all these decades is that the Everglades could have been used to coexist with the urban development that took place. I think we decided collectively not to live with the water. We decided we wanted the water out. And what that has created is that now we are trying to see, well, how can we start living with the water?
Now, Professor, I understand that you lived and taught in Miami for a decade, and you recently were one of the authors of a scientific review of the progress that's been made in restoring the Everglades. Please just take a moment to give us a brief overview of why the Everglades is already undergoing a decades-long restoration.
So you have this balance that we've broken or we've made fragile. So the overall comprehensive Everglades restoration plan, or SERP as it's called, was authorized by Congress back in 2000, and it's been ongoing ever since. The project is really more like a program because it's got over 60 large-scale projects. So the purpose of the SERP is to try to restore some capability of the system to sort of hold water in a way that you could protect the South Florida region both from floods and droughts and provide that buffer, which is what the wetland, the natural wetland, used to do. A hurricane is not always going to be like Irma. Irma is just the one that's freshest in our minds because it just happened. Every storm has a distinct set of characteristics, and we need to be prepared to deal with this range of variability. And the Everglades, the wetland, is our best bet to be able to deal with this variability. So we have to see the Everglades as our best friend.
Professor Fernando Morales-Villam is a hydrologist at the University of Maryland. Thank you so much, Professor, for taking the time today.
Thanks very much.